You grow up learning how tides move, how winds shift, how storms approach. You know which part of the coast is safe, which reef protects your village, which mangrove forests slow the waves. Now, imagine this balance begins to change. Tides become gradually higher. Storm patterns grow less predictable. Coastlines begin to evolve faster than before. Not all at once, but fast enough to ask for something new. Those communities are experiencing how environmental change reshapes landscapes, economies, and everyday life. In today's episode, we'll learn more about it and discover what a multi-hazard system actually is. My name is Federica Orsi, and this is Green Tides, a podcast by the Decade Collaborative Center for Coastal Resilience, about people, science, and ideas that are shaping the future of our coasts. Knowledge, education, technology. In the previous episode, we explored how coastal resilience is built through these areas. Today, in our fourth episode, we take a different step. Because resilience is about being able to adapt to new conditions that will settle after a disturbance has modified the previous situation. Island and archipelagic environments are what science defines as multi-hazard systems. Multi-hazard systems are where different processes interact rather than occur in isolation. Storm surge combined with sea level rise, while erosion reshapes coastlines already weakened by ecosystem degradation. At the same time, these systems often have very limited spatial buffering, which means there is less room to absorb change. And when space is limited, adaptation becomes more complex. There is also an economic dimension that cannot be ignored. In many highland regions, livelihoods depend directly on coastal environments, tourism, fisheries, and a wide range of coastal services. When ecosystems weaken, economies become more fragile, and when economies are under pressure, recovery becomes slower and more uncertain. The Caribbean is one of the most recognizable coastal regions in the world. Coral reefs, tourism-based economies, communities deeply connected to the sea. But this region is also becoming more vulnerable to hurricanes, storm surges, and sea level rise. Someone who knows this fact better than anyone else is Lorna Innes.
My name is Lorna Innes, and I'm the regional coordinator of the Intergovernmental Oceanographic Commission's Subcommission for Latin America and the Caribbean, based in Cartagena, Colombia.
As an expert of the Caribbean area, we ask Lorna, what are the most pressing coastal challenges currently affecting the highlands communities?
The Caribbean small island developing states have several coastal challenges, mainly because their economic advantages are all coastal in nature. As a result, the issues associated with ocean-related hazards, especially sea level hazards, are coastal. As a result, the economic and social advantages of the small island developing states are very much at risk, under threat from several different hazards, tsunamis, but also sea level rise. However, there's an added issue. Small island developing states in the Caribbean are very heavily indebted. And as a result, trying to recover from these hazards has become more and more difficult, as the frequency and intensity of the hazards has also increased. The third challenge is that the ecosystems that would assist with the attenuation of any kind of coastal inundation, those ecosystems are also at risk from the very same hazards, but as well from human-induced hazards.
Coral reefs are often described as natural infrastructure. They reduce wave energy before it reaches the shore, protect coastline from erosion, and sustain both biodiversity and local economies. But when reef degrades, this protection is reduced and coastal vulnerability increases.
In the last 30 years of my career, I have seen the reduction in coral reef health. And it began with coral diseases. As the coral diseases took over with an increase in sea surface temperatures, what we found was that reefs that were diseased had a greater vulnerability to these ocean-related hazards. So as a result, you have two impacts that complement each other and accelerate the degradation of coral reefs in the Caribbean region. You have the increase in sea surface temperature, you have the coral diseases, and you have the increase in frequency and intensity of sea level-related hazards. Our challenge is to restore, but also to maintain the ecosystem services that those reefs have been giving us. Now, in the tourism sector, the services that we receive from coral reefs in relation to diving is vastly reduced in the Caribbean islands because of the challenge of coral reef loss and as well as issues related to water quality. So what we are finding is that more than 80% of the corals, the existing corals in the Caribbean, are either dead or dying, which leaves us only with 20% of healthy coral reefs at this point. Either we focus on a future with no coral reefs, which is something that we would really not want the coming generations to have to deal with. That's a global issue where we need all countries to come together and address the issues of climate change. And with that continuing to function very slowly, what we are seeing is a continual degradation of coral reefs in spite of aggressive restoration efforts.
This is where we clearly see the connection between ecological and socioeconomic resilience. When ecosystems are under stress, livelihoods are affected as well.
Environmental justice in small island developing states, in my view, is a major challenge because the coastal zone is really the entire island of any small island developing state. Governments, from my experience, focus very much on the bigger picture in the hope that smaller communities will benefit. And in a sense, this is not a fair way of addressing many of the climate-related issues, because there are some communities that are much more vulnerable than others, even in these small island states. However, the measurement of vulnerability really is a scientific measure. And one of the challenges that we have in the Caribbean small islands is a lack of data, a lack of capacity to collect the data in order to address issues, for example, of environmental justice.
In many cases, relocation is not only a technical decision. It involves different factors as cultural ties, economic realities, and long-term planning constraints. But also economic dependency on tourism, which has a huge influence over adaptation choices.
Countries are having a major challenge with even this discussion. There's no way that small island developing states can compete in terms of costs, pricing, salaries, etc., related to manufacturing, for example. There are some countries that are trying to increase the levels of their financial services markets. However, now countries are looking to the blue economy as a possibility for diversification from tourism. The challenge is that many of the ideas that are being touted for blue economy will also degrade the coastal assets that these countries have. One of the big adaptation planning options is, of course, retreat from the coast. However, if you have a country that is only 400 square kilometers. There's no room for retreat, really. With that reality, then, comes the possibilities for adapting in place. And adapting in place from a coastal perspective is extremely expensive. So what is the solution? Some of the solutions that we may consider would be regional economic integration, which is, of course, one of the very strong elements that have been considered and worked on during the last 50 years by Caribbean small island developing states. The regional integration movement has assisted significantly, but when you have pivots in policy from regional integration to nationalism, this also complicates long-term adaptation planning.
Here, resilience becomes a balance between maintaining economic stability and preparing for long-term change. And now, from the Caribbean, we move to another region where coastal risks are equally complex, the Western Pacific. The Western Pacific is one of the most hazard-exposed coastal regions in the world, where typhoons, sea level rise, land subsidence, and rapid urbanization converge along densely populated coastlines. For these different areas, we spoke with another expert, Wing Zijiu. Thanks to Wenji knowledge, first we explored what are the most critical coastal challenges currently affecting communities in the Western Pacific.
Communities across the Western Pacific are facing a combination of interconnected coastal challenges driven by climate change, environmental degradation, rapid urbanization, and also increasing pressure on marine resources. So among the most critical threats are sea level rise, intensifying tropical cyclones, coastal flooding, erosion, and also marine ecosystem degradation. So sea level rise is already affecting, I think, many low-lying coastal areas and the small island communities in the region through the shoreline retreat, saltwater intrusion, and also increasing flood risk. So at the same time, stronger typhoons and extreme weather events are causing growing damage to homes, infrastructures, fisheries, and also local economies. A pollution, overfishing, and unsustainable coastal development are further weakening the ecosystem resilience and threatening food security and the livelihood. So for instance, the mangrove loss in many parts of the Southeast Asia has reduced the natural coastal protection against waves and the storms. In the recent years, seagrass degradation areas in Thailand and also in the Philippines threatens biodiversity, fishery habitats, and the blue carbon storage.
So, a big threat is created by sea level that rises from above and land that subsides from below. Together, these processes amplify exposure. What we ask Wenji is how does rapid urbanization influences coastal vulnerability?
The social vulnerability and the rapid coastal urbanization intersect with the climate risks by increasing both the exposure and the sensitivity of coast communities to climate-related hazards. Across the whole Western Pacific, I think many cities and the settlements are expanding rapidly along low-lying coastal lines that are already vulnerable to sea level rise, storm surge, flooding, coastal erosion, and extreme weather events. But however, the impacts of this hazard are not evenly distributed. Their impacts are strongly shaped by social and economic conditions. You know, the rapid urban expansion often pushes the lower income population into hazard-prone areas such as low-lying coastline river mouths, reclaiming lines, or informal settlements. So these communities frequently have inadequate infrastructure and limited access to early warning systems, health care, and also financial resources for recovery. So in one word, I think climate risk in this region, particularly in coastal areas, is not only an environmental issue, but also our development and the social equity challenges.
Before leaving Wenji, one last question. Among all these coastal challenges, what is the core role of IOC Westpac?
The coastal challenges facing the Western Pacific are highly interconnected and transboundary. The scale and the complexity of these challenges far exceed the capacity of any single country or institution to address alone. So the UNESCO IOC Subcommission for the Western Pacific, Westpac, as a regional arm of the UNESCO IOC, works very closely with the national institutions, coastal communities, and also international partners to strengthen the coastal resilience and the preparedness. So its core role is to bring together governmental agencies, research institutions, universities, and communities across the region through, you know, science policy interface, training workshop, and also regional network and collaborative and many practical action-oriented initiatives. So in this context, and the collaboration with the DECADE Collaborative Center for Coastal Resilience can significantly enhance both our national and also regional capacity and the global knowledge share exchange.
Across both regions, we observe recurring patterns: multi-hazard exposure, limited space for adaptation, strong economic dependency on coastal systems, and reduced capacity to absorb shocks. Islands have fewer alternatives when systems are disrupted, which make resilience more demanding. This is why they are often described as early indicators of global change. Even if far from the inland, highlands can teach us what the future will be like. If this episode made you aware of how coastal risks are experienced differently around the world, explore the DCCCR work on environmental justice and capacity development. You can subscribe to our newsletter or visit our website through the link in the episode description. And don't forget to follow our podcast on your favorite platform and turn on notifications to stay connected. Until next time, protect and respect our coastal ocean. Green Tides is a podcast by DCCCR, DECADE Collaborative Center for Coastal Resilience, produced by Podstar. Narrator, Federica Orsi. Writing, Lorenzo Molino. Sound design, Antonio Mezzadra. Graphics, Laura Fracasso. Producer, Esther Memeo. Special thanks to CMCC, Euro-Mediterranean Center for Climate Change, Heron and Deltares.